There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
You know, as much as I thought I would lead off with like some clip from John Bolton talking about the fact that he would testify or the latest news coming out of Iran and Iraq and the State Department, I realize where I am. And so therefore, the number one news clip, well, sounds like this.
My family and coaches in going through a thorough analysis of the alternatives. And without further ado, with lots of prayers, thoughts, and guidance, I have decided that I will be declaring and entering the 2020 NFL Draft. My 3 years at the University of Alabama have been the epitome of a roller coaster. I've had a fair share of ups, of many ups and a handful of downs, and I couldn't be happier to know that with all the success and failures I've had here at the university, it has prepared me for life in general. I can't express how grateful I am to have attended the greatest school in college. But the biggest thing I remember with my time.
Okay. See, this is why Tua, come on, man. This is why you do all this stuff before you give the announcement that you're going into the draft. But there it is. So, you know, didn't want that hanging over us the whole time. We'd be talking about international affairs or the upcoming session in Montgomery. And the whole time you just wonder, so what's Tua doing? Well, he's going to take the money. Good for him. Good for him. That may be tough for the University of Alabama this year, maybe not, but good news for him. That's, I'm sure, whatever package they put together and salary and signing bonus and all that will be life-changing for that young man, and good for him. All right, 1208, it's FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all, my name is Sean Sullivan, live local talk over the next couple of hours, and lots to get into, lots to talk about. And I mentioned this morning, Representative District 105, Chip Brown, would join us in studio, and I know he's in to talk about some pre-filed legislation, something we had talked about in the past, but I can't have him in studio in the time he spent serving our country outside our borders without picking his head on a couple of these issues that have dominated the discussion on Friday and earlier today. So, welcome, Chip Brown. Hey, man.
Well, thanks, Sean. It's great to be here with local radio legend, Sean Sullivan.
I don't know about that. Did you buttering me up here,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to get into the upcoming session in Montgomery, some of the pre-filed legislation. Sure. But your reaction, because you have a savvy for international affairs and military.
Right.
Your reaction to the strike last week on Soleimani.
Well, I think it's a great day. I think that he was a target of opportunity. I mean, people have to understand that someone like that, they have eyes on him. They know mm-hmm. they know where he is, but you got to wait for that right moment mm-hmm. to take him out. And that was the right moment. I mean,
because this is something we went around on the air last week with callers, the right moment being where he is, not just saying he's done X, Y, and Z, now he's finally done this thing, it's where you're not going to have...
civilian casualties, you know, I mean...
And he was with some other bad guys in
right.
this situation.
And I'm sure they'd been tracking those guys, you mm-hmm. know, they knew exactly the one was the militia leader mm-hmm. there in Iraq. And, you know, think about this, okay, if they would have waited another 20 minutes, where would he have been? He might have been in a neighborhood. You take him out in that neighborhood, then you have civilian casualties.
Right.
It was just the right time.
Oh, it was so precision.
I mean,
to see that
precision.
Video.
You know,
two cars, the building not damaged, the roadway not
right.
damaged.
I mean, that's the ultimate precision. That, you know, and the thing is, think about this. People that are whining and moaning and complaining about, oh my gosh, they took out this terrorist.
Right.
I mean, how can you – I mean, my God, we live in the United States of America. This guy's responsible for at least, at a minimum, 600 American service members' deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was the lead culprit of providing materials for IEDs in Iraq, bringing in foreign fighters from all over to fight as a proxy for Iran,
right,
in Iraq, killing our service members. How can you – I mean, to me, yeah, it's treasonous for you to say – killing this terrorist somehow is making us less safe. I just
because
think
he because he wears the uniform of the Quds Force, right, and the Iranian army. So therefore, he would be different than any other.
And the reality is, Iran has been at war with us since 1979, and I think that, you know, people often forget the big picture, and the big picture is that these guys want to kill us, plain and simple. They want to kill us.
Yes.
I mean, it's no, they're not going to give, if this was Sean Sullivan or Chip Brown in that same situation, they're not going to think twice.
Right.
They're not going to think twice. So by killing this guy, by killing Soleimani, it's going to make America a safer place in the long term, and it's going to make the world a safer place in the long term, because Iran is the number one purveyor of terrorism throughout the world. So I think this was a well-thought-out precision strike. They'd been following him for years.
Mm-hmm.
Bush had failed to act. Obama had failed to act. And Trump pulled the trigger and
got him.
This is where we are.
You know, a couple things. It's, you know, people are asking the what's next and what's next and what's next. And those, you know, we won't know until they do something. If they don't. But, you know, the Iranians have in the past. They do a lot of saber rattling. I mean, that's right, their style, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, they are the classic, you know, the bark is bigger than the bite. But they do have a global network,
mm-hmm,
and they have cells. They have cells in the U.S. I mean, you know, don't...
They finance terrorism.
That's right. I mean, you can never under... And they are the leading supplier of proxy armies around the world. I mean, they start civil wars. They start... They, you know, look at Yemen, mm-hmm, look at Syria. All of that really resulted it was bad policy on our part, but it's also Iran getting in and meddling, trying to become the dominant power in that region. If you look at one of the telltale things on this to me is, if you look at the Middle East and Southwest Asia in particular, Iran has no friends in the region. I mean, Bahrain is, they're cozy with them a little bit, mm-hmm, but we have a big Navy base there.
Mm-hmm.
So Bahrain's never going to upset the apple cart as far as the United States is concerned. But Iran is disliked in that region, and Saudi Arabia, you know, Qatar,
yeah,
Kuwait, they all stand against Iran. They're right, all allied against us, with us against Iran.
Yeah, and then you look at the fact that what's going on in Iraq, here the parliament votes to remove American forces, but we realize it's barely a quorum of the parliament that was there. Those people that are directed, they're Iraqis, but they sure as heck seem to toe the Iranian line, whether it's because they're paid for or because they're, you know, the religious, you know, drive here, they're Shia, and the, you know, the Iranians are Shia, or the fact that you've got the Hamas folks there basically acting like henchmen, saying you got to go do X, Y, and Z, and this is in Iraq. This is not Hamas attacking Israel. This is Hamas throwing around some weight in Iraq.
That's right. Well, you know, all that comes directly from Iran, and one of the things that's unique about Iran is, you know, they're not Arabs. They're Persians.
Persians, right.
That's right. And so if you look at, I haven't seen the tally of who voted to expel the American forces, but I guarantee if you look at it, they're Shia, they're aligned with Iran, but they are a minority in Iran, I mean in Iraq,
mm-hmm,
and it's, I think we're on good footing here. I really do. I mean, there may be some things that happen in the short term, and that, you know, I hate to see that.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I remember in 2008 being over in that region of the world,
mm-hmm,
and having discussions with people and talking about force, and you know, they would tell you off camera that, you know, they appreciated the fact that we acted swiftly after 9/11. We were attacked, eye for an eye. We stood up for America, and we, mm-hmm, fought back. Now, you fast forward, I remember being in Afghanistan in 2009 and sitting at the Afghan Information Ministry with a bunch of Afghan leaders, let's say minister types.
Right.
And Obama came on discussing foreign policy, and they said, he's going to destroy your country. He's making you weaker. because that part of the world, weakness, they can detect weakness. Mm-hmm. And if you're weak, they're going to take advantage of you, which means taking advantage of the United States. It means destroying our foreign policy. And Trump, has, since he got elected, has done one thing, and that is rebuild ourselves around the world, rebuild our military, and rebuild our reputation. And I appreciate the fact that if you mess with the United States, there's going to be a response. It's going to be swift, it's going to be fast, and it's going to be deadly, and it's going to be overwhelming. Because that's what that part of the world understands.
Right, but at the same time, I enjoyed the last time President Trump, like this time, he's on the side of one group. The last time that he chose not to do a full-out retaliation for the shooting down the drone, I said that was, I appreciate that as statesmanlike, because I said, hey, you know what, that's a drone. If you go in there and knock out one of those bases there along the coast, you martyr all those people. I said...
That's right. It was a measured restraint.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, and, we could do this, but we're not, we realize y'all just shot down a drone, we're not happy, but we're not going to wipe out...
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And you take that and compare that with when they captured the U.S. sailors aboard that ship and used them for propaganda purposes. What was our response? No response. No response. I mean, that is the ultimate weakness.
Right.
You have to, it goes all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt, you know, carry a big stick.
Walk softly. And, you know, what I like, or speak softly, what I do like as well is I think there are a lot of people in the Middle East that just took their, they had a sheet here that says this is how the U.S., it's like a flow chart of how the United States reacts to this, that, or the other, and they had to break the erasers out and then go to number three here on this. Coming right back, this is just part of the discussion. We're going to talk about some state politics. Chip Brown, District 105 in studio this hour. Phone number, text line for you, 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And I would take like a call here, maybe a text or two, but I want to get into talking about what's coming up in February in Montgomery. Chip Brown, District 105, South Mobile County. Was that the best description of 105? You got the south side?
It's the best part of the county. That's what I would say.
And one with the beach, right?
That's right. Beach, shipping, farming, you know, seafood. We've got it all.
You see? That's how you sell your district. That is it. We're going to talk about what's happening, some pre-filed actions and what you expect out of the start of session. Because I've been telling everybody, you think last year was interesting. I think this year is going to be even more. I do want to grab one call. He's been holding on. Fireball, we'll grab his call now in Mobile. Hey, Fireball.
Hey, guys. Y'all doing a fantastic job. Look here. The reason Trump didn't tell Congress what he was going to do, because one of them would have notified the fella that we took out.
Well, I said somebody described it the other day. Shifty Shift would have immediately held a press conference before you even finished reading the whole document. So
that's right.
And,
that's right.
You know, the thing is, if you cannot.
Wait a second. You're saying that he would have held a press conference. You're not agreeing that he would have given the information to Soleimani.
Oh, he would. He would have held a press conference, and which is the same thing.
He would have those guys monitor
our media.
It would have got to Obama, and he would have called him and told him.
Well, the thing is,
I'm done with the two of y'all. Y'all can have your conversation.
Well, you can't have a coherent foreign policy if you have to go to Congress or run up there every time that you want to act. I mean, that, you know,
you had actionable intelligence and you acted on it. I've been a supporter of the strike. I mean, even though it is, and I am, you know, one of those non-neocon isolationists, right, as I get called, but I agreed with that strike.
Well, you know,
I don't believe that. Now, is Schiff the best thing for our republic? No. Is he a operative that would, like, get on the phone and call somebody in Iran and tell them it was coming? I don't believe that either, but I could be proven wrong.
No, well, you know, it's...
Thanks for the call, Fireball.
When I was in Afghanistan for years, particularly in the Obama administration, because it was a NATO action, when you had targets, you had to run them through the NATO chain of command and the U.S. chain of command. And there are multiple times when targets of opportunity failed to materialize because it took too long to run it up that chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably dysfunctional. That's dysfunctionality at its best.
Yes.
So imagine if you had a foreign policy where every single time you had to run up to Capitol Hill and say, hey, Nancy, I really want to take this guy out. Okay, well, let me think about it, and 10 days later, I might get back with you. I mean, they impeached.
No, I agree with
that. They impeached the guy, and the articles are still sitting there waiting to go to the Senate. Yeah, nothing moves fast up there.
Good point. But so I respect that. I'm actually, and I believe that you have actionable intelligence that saves lives, and American lives like that. You act on it and do that, because I don't think that's a war powers, situation.
Right.
At the same time, I don't... Do they love to disagree with anything President Trump says? Yes. Do I think that they would be the picking up the phone and calling Iran and saying, "Here's what's going to happen"? I don't buy that. But that puts me on the island.
I think that they put politics ahead of country almost every day, multiple times. And that's unfortunate. I mean, that's not what they're there for. But I do think he does. I mean, we have three branches of government, and there are checks and balances, and he does have a responsibility to keep them informed of what's going on. It may be after the fact, but
he has
done that. He went to the Capitol Hill, and he gave them the intelligence reports of why he acted, and I think, to me, that fulfills an obligation,
And I like that, too. I mean, that's what people don't realize. They say, my person's in the White House, and everything's good. Y'all, this system is not a system based on man. It's based on the rule of law. It's based on a document.
That's right. And I mean, we're a constitutional republic. We're not a democracy. Right. We're not a direct democracy. We're a constitutional republic.
Imagine how long it would take if we were.
Oh my gosh! But I mean, we have a constitution, and that's the way that you govern is that constitution. And
even if it doesn't suit you at that given time.
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's. We're a system that's set up that if you don't like the people that are in office, then you vote them out and put new people in, and that maybe have your political view, and you go from there.
Well, let's do it. I'll use this as a pivot here or a segue, because I want to get into something you and I talked about last year, a bill that you had filed last year, and it's coming back this year. You've pre-filed it. Is it in the system?
I have not pre-filed it. I checked with Legislative Reference Service, and it's done. It's the same bill that I brought last year, word for word, the bill that passed the House 92-3.
Wow.
I will be pre-filing it.
92-3, you couldn't get... The sun rises and the east pass through the House 92-3.
It was a tough measure, let's put it that way, but it's something that's needed. It actually had the support of the Sheriff's Association, Police Chiefs Association, District Attorneys Association, and it passed unanimously in the House Judiciary Committee, got to the floor, had bipartisan support, and... passed 92-3.
That's amazing.
Went up to the Senate and hung around the last week of the Senate and just, didn't make it time-wise.
Okay, well, let's talk. We're going to come into that. But people who weren't paying attention when we were talking about this last year, and I was using that as a pivot because I said, if somebody was going to be a opponent or detractor of this, they would question constitutionality of things. Right?
Right. Well,
Lay out for folks, first of all, let's back up and tell them what this bill was that's being filed again this year.
It's a constitutional amendment that deals with bond reform, or bail reform.
Okay.
And currently under Alabama law, under the Code of Alabama, really the only time that you can deny bond to someone is when they're charged with a capital crime. Now, a judge can set a bond that's astronomical and...
So you have accomplished it, but by semantically. Right. Okay.
So from a constitutional standpoint, what this does, it actually would reform Chapter 6, Section 13 of the Criminal Code of Alabama, and it would allow for a judge to deny bond for violent Class A felonies. You're talking about murder, kidnapping, violent domestic assault, rape. All your heinous crimes but the way it would work is that a district attorney could request an evidentiary hearing from a judge. The judge could deny the hearing or grant the hearing, and what the district attorney would have to present is that individual that's charged with one of those crimes is a threat, an imminent threat to the community, a threat to themselves, or a flight risk. Present the evidence. The judge can still grant bond if he said they didn't meet that threshold, that hurdle, then, or he could deny bond. And where I think it's important on this is from a constitutional, from an Eighth Amendment standpoint.
That's what I'm looking at here, yeah.
From an Eighth Amendment standpoint, first of all, the federal government does that all the time. They deny bond to people that they think are an imminent threat in the community all the time. But where it meets that constitutionality is that it's not a mandate. The judge can still deny bond or grant bond. So it doesn't say if you're charged with rape, if you're charged with kidnapping, that you will be denied bond. What it says is if you are an imminent threat to the community and they can show evidence, then that judge can deny you bond. And where that comes into play is you take a case like the Anaya Blanchard case that unfortunately just happened a few months ago. You know, beautiful girl, college student up at Southern Union, kidnapped and murdered. And the guy, Yazid, that's charged with her kidnapping and her murder, he was out on a $280,000 bond.
For doing what?
Attempted murder and kidnapping. I mean,
y'all hear that? I don't know how many people have studied that case like that. He was out for attempting to do what he did to Anaya Blanchard.
And in that case, too, he had two individuals that he had kidnapped, two elderly people, had kidnapped them. One was a 77-year-old man that was almost beat within an inch. He was beaten within an inch of his life, and he was pulled over, and the individuals were in the car. So they would have surely met the same fate that Anaya Blanchard met. And because it wasn't a capital murder case, the judge gave him $280,000 bond. He's out on the streets a few weeks later. He kills his college student, and here we are. So this would have had an opportunity to save a life. I've had several people across the state, particularly domestic violence, you know, people involved in the domestic violence community, you know, supporting victims and victims' rights advocates come to me and say, look, you know, this constitutional amendment has the potential, and law enforcement has told me that, has the potential to save lives across the state. And so we're going to pre-file it and go from there. I think we've got a lot of support this time. I think last year was a dry run.
Nothing should change in the House too much, right? You got that support in the House. So now you just got to get the austere body of the Senate to...
Well, and I think we're getting an earlier start this time. Right. And by pre-filing, you know, I think we're on a good track to get this going pretty quickly in the Senate, then the House, and then move it up to the Senate. And it has support in the Senate. I've worked hard up there to line up supporters, and there we go.
Okay, we'll talk more about this when we return. Our conversation with Representative Chip Brown, District 105, where they've got seafood.
Farming.
Beaches.
Shipbuilding.
Well, yeah.
Great place to raise a family.
There you go. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By the way, Dalton has informed me that we have three tickets to tonight's Lending Tree. Well, now, Dalton, three. You know, I've been too many decades in radio. I don't deal with, like, if we're giving odd numbers. I mean, we either do a pair or a family four-pack or 10. I'm just... pushing 30 years here soon in this business, and I'm just used to three. Okay. Well, at some point in between now and two, we'll give away three tickets to the bowl game tonight.
And I wonder if you'll see Dalton there as a single.
And I was just wondering what the whole story is there. We got three, so we'll get into that in a second. And yes, if you missed the beginning of the show, we dealt with the big breaking news, which is not Iran, which is not legislative session coming up in Montgomery. Tua is entering the draft, so you don't have to wait around to hear more on that. Guest in studio, District 105, House of Representatives, Chip Brown, getting ready for February 6th?
4th.
See, yeah. I'm trying
coming
to
soon.
So February 4th,
yeah.
Session gets started. This bill that is coming back up, you don't have a number on it yet.
No, we are pre-filing it. There's been something like maybe 40 bills pre-filed.
Okay. So it'll be 41. HB 41.
Maybe.
By the end of the session, we'll be talking about it by its number for sure. What else are you expecting when you get up there? What do you think is day one? What's the first few days of session?
Well, we're going to have to do something on prisons. I'm just not sure I'm not sure which direction the governor is going to take on that. You know, there's, I don't know, to be honest with you, Sean. She's got to do something on it.
You think there's a chance of a split? I was in a conversation the other day where it would be, because I've told the audience over time, she does have this option through the executive branch to have private company build a prison, then we would rent the space and put ADOC people in there?
That's right. I've heard that. And then I know that one time they were looking at doing that and then doing three regional prisons and closing some of the smaller facilities.
Right. But that's part of it too, right? Because there's all these mental health issues and medical and all that.
And that's, you know, to me, one of the two biggest things we need to spend money on in regards to prisons is mental health.
Right.
I mean, that's, if you look at the prison population, you look at the homeless population, you look at the drug problems we have in society, so much of it can be traced back to mental health.
Right.
So I think that, you know, we don't spend enough in Alabama on mental health. And I think that if we addressed a lot of those issues, then we may not have the prison population that we have in Alabama. But even when someone is in prison, I think the mental health issues need to be addressed. It's easy to say throw people in prison and throw away the key, but at the same time, you've got to address where they're going to be when they get out.
Yeah, if you do have people that are eligible for parole, I think the studies have shown your money ahead if you make sure that they have the best chance. You get, because I don't know what the recidivism rate is right now in the state, but I mean, every bit of increase in recidivism rate costs taxpayers money.
That's right, and if you went in with a mental health problem, then chances are you're going to get out with an even worse mental health problem. You know, and I think we need to look at some workforce development issues inside the prisons in regards to teaching people trades so that when they get out, they do have an opportunity to get gainfully employed. Because, you know, a lot of people, if you give them an opportunity, you give them the education and the skills, then they're not going to repeat again. I mean,
especially
you're going to have a certain element that is going to repeat no matter what. But you're still going to have people that if we address those issues, then they might actually get out and become productive members of society.
And this is an age-wise, too. Now, everything I've learned has just been through osmosis, being around people in law enforcement and people who study this stuff. But, and I can't speak for ladies, but for dudes, we've got this, whatever it is, 15 to 30 years old or whatever, I may not even have the numbers right, where they're apt to commit crimes and violent crimes.
Right, that's the majority of your violent offenders are in that age range.
If you teach them while they're in there, you know, if it's a real violent crime, I don't want them ever getting out. But if somebody had made a mistake like that, and then they get out, and then they have a skill set, maybe once they're older, they're past 30 or whatever, and they do have a skill set, they don't have a chance of reoffending as much.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, think about the situation. You get out of prison and you have no skills, you have no jobs, you have no opportunity, what are you going to do? You're going to fall back into that same culture that you came
from. You probably learn bad guy stuff in jail, too. You probably learn more kind of bad guy stuff.
That's a breeding ground for honing your criminal skills. That's
right. There's continuing education going on in our prisons. It just happens to be on how to be a criminal.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, right now our prisons in Alabama are overcrowded.
Yeah.
They're understaffed. We did just put some new... we hired, I'm trying to think how many... quite a few new prison guards recently, but we're still way understaffed from the federal government, you know, is still leaning on the state saying we have to address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to see prison reform come up. Now prison reform and sentencing reform are two different issues. But you're definitely going to see prison reform come.
You think in the form of a special, or do you think y'all will deal with it in regular session?
You know, I don't know. I early on, I was hearing a lot of talk. You know, it was conversation when we adjourned in June that we may come back almost immediately or in August in a special session to address the prison situation in the state. And then we were told, well, the governor is working on it. And they've had a study commission made up of members of the House and the Senate and the governor's representatives and people from law enforcement working on developing a solution. And then that was pushed back. And then originally I was hearing a lot of talk about going into session and then going into a special session immediately. But I'm not hearing that talk right now. I think it'll be addressed in a regular session. That's my thought. That's what
So, well, you have a better thought than any of us since you're front row.
Well, you know? that's kind of the talk, is that we'll address it in the regular session, or the governor through executive action may address it herself.
But it could, I mean, could it be? Like, I'm hearing that it could be both, that there could be one leg of this, maybe the physical construction of these facilities, some deal with the executive branch. But then the other things you just went through, mental health and all these things, y'all could
be addressed
deal with that.
To the legislature, correct.
So it could be a split.
I think it could be. You could very likely see the governor deal with issues on our own, and then the other deal with in the general session, not during a special session.
By the way, this may be perfect segue from stories, because I read Associated Press story came up that trash cost cash, the old, you know, 2018, I think they had that big push against PSAs were running trash cost cash, and it says roadside litter cost Alabama $6.8 million. $6.8 million in picking up. So, I'm just saying, if they're looking for a skill set, I mean, we got, you know, road crews.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's like
stick with a nail on it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's in the flip side of that, though.
So we can get the people out of prison.
If you remember last session, there was a bill that came up that would not have allowed cities to ban plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
And that blew up. That became a big issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was two sides to that. One, you had the small government side that says, hey, look, if I live on Dauphin Island and I'm a city councilman on Dauphin Island, and the majority of my city council wants to ban plastic bags for ecological reasons, then environmental reasons, then we ought to have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of that is the litter situation too. If a city wanted to do that, then they should have the right to do that.
Oh, I was fighting for that. Not, and people said, "Wait, you don't dislike plastic bags?" I said, "No, they're my luggage, right?
Right.
I use my match sets of luggage from houses or wherever."
Yeah. So I travel to hotels.
But yes, I mean, it's great. And then if you know, you can get one of the real big bags to carry for a longer trip. But I'm serious about this, and the fact that you pointed it out, that if we're bothered by the federal government telling Alabama what we can do, overmanaging our decisions here, Montgomery turns around and tells the municipalities the same thing.
That's right. And
they should have the right. If they want to make plastic bags illegal in a city, they should have the right to vote that through.
If that's what the, you know, and that bill came out of North Alabama, where they tend to see things a little differently sometimes, mm-hmm. on certain issues. And I think they were surprised by the uproar from South Alabama. I mean, I was getting probably 15 emails a day telling me
that was the issue,
stand against this bill, you know. So
so do you see, okay, so we don't think right now, looking at a special for prisons, we've got some of the heavy lifts, the beginning of the quadrennium heavy lifts are out, but there's still other things. I know we're going to be talking about education in the state. I know going forward, the question is going to come up for the lottery.
Lottery, I mean, will definitely come up again.
I mean, could it really surprised, well, parts of my brain, not all of it, was surprised last year when I said, there are two bills supporting the lottery, both, because if we take our time machine, you and I are close to the same age, take the time machine, let's go back to the 1990s, and realize both bills for the lottery came out of Republican.
Right.
Out of the Republican camp.
That's right.
They came out of the Republican camp. You got a Republican governor who, she didn't say she was for it, but she's like, I'm not against it. I'm just, you know, I'm governor.
Well, I mean,
hey,
you know,
how are y'all? And all that's, because if you went back to the last time this was pushed, the idea that both houses, you know, the House and the Senate would have a Republican bill for the lottery coming out, and this thing doesn't make it.
Yeah, it was a complicated issue. I actually, I voted for the lottery last year, And, you know, if you look at it, I told someone, I said, heck, we've been playing the lottery for years. We've just been playing it in Florida and Mississippi now,
right,
and
right.
Tennessee and Georgia. We're really surrounded.
Absolutely.
I mean, every
literally.
State has it. And so we're paying to enhance the education system in Florida. We're doing that in Mississippi. You know, we're doing it in Tennessee and Georgia. So to me, it just doesn't make sense that we don't have a lottery. And if you don't want to play, then don't pay. Don't go down and buy a ticket.
Right.
But if you,
but doesn't it get into who's getting the money? In other words, how much goes into general fund? How much goes into ETF? Are you going to bridge the gap between the two?
It's a complicated issue. You know, you have to have some go to education, I think. But
let me ask you an uncomfortable question. Why do you?
Well, I think I think you put some towards education because of that time when you have a downturn in the economy that gives you a little bit of money at least to make
but
up a portion.
You can't bank on lottery money the way you could on property tax.
Right? But do I think all of it should go to education? No, I don't, because if you look at the way that we fund our budgets in Alabama, the general fund is the budget that's constantly in trouble.
Yes.
Last year we ran a surplus in the education budget, and the general fund budget, you know, is barely getting by. And if you look at what comes out of the general fund budget, everything except for education comes out of the general fund budget. So that last year, that was a sticking point of where the money was going to go. And then also you had a situation where, you know, you have certain members that are going to vote against any kind of gaming bill, any kind of alcohol bill, anything like that.
Sure, but there are fewer in numbers than they used to.
But then you also had an issue on the Democrat side that many of them wanted it to go to Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted it to be earmarked for Medicaid expansion. And then also, you got to remember, we were fresh off the heels of the abortion bill about 2 weeks after that. And there were some that were upset, still lingering, some Democrats that were still upset about the abortion bill that we had just passed the House. That was the toughest abortion bill in the country. So it was almost like a perfect storm.
But the abortion bill passed the House, but the lottery did not. Didn't pass the Senate. No, didn't pass the House.
What happened with that, too, is, you know, and if you have a bill in the legislature, if you have a bill in the House, you have to pass first the budget isolation resolution that says
BIRs, baby.
BIR, where the money's going to go, how much is going to, what, how is it going to affect the budget, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, it's based on how many members are there that day, how many members are in the chamber. And I think that day we needed to get to 65, and it came in at 63, I believe, on the BIR. So if we probably, with enough work, could have gotten the BIR, but then you run into a situation with, are you going to get a majority even after you get the BIR? So the thing died on the BIR, and being a constitutional amendment, it requires more votes on the BIR. So it's a complicated situation, but they're coming back with it again this year, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
We're going to pick your brain on what happens when we come back. More with Representative Chip Brown, and your text and calls at 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Representative Chip Brown, guest in studio. I just launched to him the idea I've probably launched on y'all a couple times, my idea of the Alabama prison lottery. Now, there's a lot of states that have lotteries to go to education, Chip. What about, you know, Alabama could be funding prisons?
We'd make national news, that's
yes,
for sure.
That is for sure. You know, we're also talking about going forward in this. Who wants what out of the money that would come out of a lottery? And I talk about the prison thing just because nobody wants to build prison.
Right.
You know, as elected official, you don't want to go. I mean, you're pretty brave to talk about what, because nobody wants to go, I believe we should spend more money on prison, because they don't realize the full story of this. What would happen if we had a federal receivership? I don't want to spend money on prisons either, but...
Yeah, I tell you what, that's the worst possible scenario. If the federal government came in, they look at it from a numbers game, pure and simple. They look at it and they say, you have a prison that's supposed to hold 5,000 inmates and you have 7,000 inmates in there, you have to let 2,000 of them go. And
that's, y'all hear that?
That has happened in California. It's happened in other states. And Alabama has had that maybe 20 years ago or so. We were under a federal receivership for him, and it's the worst case scenario. So we have to deal with the prison situation. Because
right. It's not because y'all think it's like, oh, this is a great thing. I mean, believe me, I imagine every elected official in Montgomery, the last thing they want to do is deal, you know, at least politically with this, but it has to be done.
That's right. I mean, you know that with responsibility comes that you have to act. You have to. That's what you're there for. And so we're going to have to address the prison situation, because the worst thing that could possibly happen is us to run into a situation where we're having to open the doors and let murderers and child molesters and you name it out the door. I mean, and that's, the federal government just looks at it from a numbers game and says, you're 2,000 over, you're 20,000 over, what have you. And then there you go, you know, and
That's why, I mean, that's what scares me, y'all. I mean, that's why
it should.
Bentley was in office when I've been on, started on this, you know, this discussion.
Well, and it's an easy thing to kick down the road, you know. You want to kick that can down the road because no one wants to address it. I mean, from a legislative standpoint.
You'd rather not address it, right?
No, I mean, the last thing you want to do is is deal with issues. I mean, you want to go up there and deal with issues that have an effect on your district that people can see that impacts their daily life.
Yep.
And so those are the things that, you know, we have 105 House members. I'm number 105, bottom of the state.
Yeah.
But
top of our hearts.
That's right. 105, but first in your hearts. And there's certain issues like that, you know, we're tasked with, I think, providing for the general well-being of our population, and that in prisons and our jails are a big part of that. I mean, you got to provide adequate funding for law enforcement. You got to provide places to put people once they commit crimes, keep them off the streets to try to keep our society safe. And it's just something that you have to do. It's not an issue that people want to deal with, but it's been kicked down the road too long, and we're going to have to deal with it, and it's going to come up in this session.
Now, we're going to be talking about that going forward. We also mentioned the lottery. I know, obviously, there's push already going on for a compact deal being offered from the Porch Creek Band of Creek Indians to enter into a compact with the state. Robert McGee was on with me talking about it in the past. Have y'all been versed on this? Is the message gotten out to members of the legislature?
You know, really, Sean, it's a complicated issue, and it's an issue that, I think the public, some people in the public have a perception that we're constantly bombarded with issues like that
What is it like?
But
like,
it's not like that.
It's not like that?
No. And the reality is a lot of that is just up to us to study the issues and look at what's the best choice for our districts. And that's one thing I will say about Speaker McCutcheon. He's a great man. And one of the things that he has always said and always says to us, vote your district. Vote what's important to your district. And so that's the way I look at issues. And I think other members of the House look at that way, is what's the best thing from District 105?
Right.
Not District 32 or 22 or 1 or whatever, but what's the best thing for District 105? And, you know, we study those issues and we get as much information as we can. We do have, and a lot of people think, too, we have these huge staffs. We don't have any staff.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is if you're a House member, you really have no staff. We have a legislative office that has two personnel that work there. And they do a great job for us, but they serve all the members of the Mobile delegation. Mm-hmm. And then in Montgomery, you know, you might have one committee clerk that has 15 members.
How many of y'all? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so it's a lot of that really is just strictly up to us to do our research and to analyze issues and to look at it and pick the best path.
All right. Well, we're up on the we're at the top of, but also at the bottom. We're at 1 and 105 at the same time. Coming back, you got to come back in before session gets started?
Love to do it. Okay. Love to do it. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, man, a pleasure. What a great conversation. February 4th.
February 4th. We go in January 22nd, 23rd. We have budget hearings, and then we officially gavel in at noon on February 4th.
All right. Snap up your chin strap and get ready.
Hey, let's do it.
All right. It's Chip Brown. Thank you. Thank you so much. District 105, House of Representatives. Hey, coming back next hour, too, we'll go to across the hallway there to the Senate from District 32, State Senator Chris Elliott's going to join us. We're going to talk a bit about some of this. Well, you know what? It's something that we talked about last year, a bill that was filed that has come up in the discussions over the last week or so, or week and a half, since Mobile City Councilman Joel Daves was on the show and announced his ordinance that he took to the city council to remove the city of Mobile's fire and police public services from the police jurisdiction. Now, that is questioned, and is it legal? Well, something that Senator Chris Elliott's brought up before is, well, let's just change the law and make there no requirement to offer any police jurisdiction services in the state of Alabama. He'll lay that case out for us in just a little bit, and we will return with three. Let's do this, Dalton. Caller number six. We've got three tickets to tonight's bowl game. That would be three, not four, not two. We got three tickets to tonight's bowl game. Caller number six at 343-0106. Those three tickets are yours.